Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Market insight and analysis. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street. Good morning and welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm David Faber along with Jim Cramer. Carl is going to be joining us shortly. Intraday highs look likely at the open as strong earnings, vaccine news, and stimulus outweighs worries about new COVID variants or inflation. Yeah, inflation, the 30-year yield. Hey, it hit 2%. And Brent for oil is at 60. Let's get to our roadmap this morning. It does start with the cooling Reddit trade volatility. Stocks look to continue, as we said, to rise following Wall Street's best week last week since November. Plus, we're going to talk about Tesla's Bitcoin move, the automaker buying $1.5 billion in cryptocurrency, in that cryptocurrency, and it does plan to start accepting it as payment for its products. And we do have renewed concerns about COVID. South Africa halts AstraZeneca's vaccine rollout. And President Biden says herd immunity, well, it could be difficult to get to before summer's end. And Jim, of course, I don't know where you want to start this morning. You know, I mean, we should point out when we talk COVID, there is good news, which is the case counts are way down. Hospitalizations are down. Deaths lagging, unfortunately, and continue to be quite high. But there is a lot of concern about new variants. At the same time, vaccinations are picking up pace.
Look, I am very positive, and a lot of my information comes from Dr. Gottlieb, who's been very good about the rollout. He didn't use the word glut, but he did say that we're going to be hard-pressed to find more people beyond 100 million, literally in April, who have already taken it. And I think that what he's saying is a clarion call of we better find a new way, other than the algos that were talked about today in the Wall Street Journal, to get those vaccines to people once we have so many of them. So, David, look, I know we can say that it's going to be with us for a long time, but I get my flu shot every year. I keep thinking, why haven't they wiped out flu? But they haven't. I think it's going to be a form of flu from the very beginning, David. Literally a year ago, you said that when we have therapeutics, when we have a mist, when we have something we can take care of ourselves, then this will become an illness, not a fatality, something that's killing millions of people. David, I think we're getting closer and closer to that, but we keep losing eye on the prize. We keep talking about a vaccine. We need to talk about therapeutics.
No, you're right. It's funny because there was a period at which, as you know, I thought and many others perhaps believed as well, you'd see the therapeutics prior to seeing the vaccines. But in fact, the vaccine moved along at rapid speed, and we're thankful for that. But those therapeutics will be there eventually, Jim. And to your point, as this stays in the background, as this mutates to some extent, those actually may end up still being a very important line of defense, something that you can take if, in fact, you get it, if there is adequate testing around as well, which we all hope will be the case, that will just immediately stop the symptoms and or the progression of any disease. And so that will be really important, and that will allow us to be back to normal as well, even when we do get closer to herd immunity.
Well, what I've been spending a lot of time on is talking about what is back to normal. Right. Is back to normal going to the mall? We have Simon Properties tonight. We should find out, right?
Yeah.
Simon Properties, good company. Is back to normal traveling again? Is back to normal saying, you know what, I'm going to go out to eat? A lot of the ads last night in the Super Bowl about going out to eat, right, trying to make it so that restaurants do well. David, I think the cost of making people feel confident to go to a restaurant will still be higher than what the traffic will bear. I do think Uber's interesting, if only just because that's just a phenomenon of people wanting to stay at home that we've learned about. And it's become ingrained. It's one of the reasons why we know that that Uber's been terrific. The DoorDash, David, what a stock. And you know the founders and the money back there, making it so that it's a change in the way people feel about private equity, the way people feel about venture capital, as well as the way people feel about SPACs. Obviously, we have to get to that.
Yeah, well, we always got to talk SPACs. There are so many today, both new ones and deals being announced. You mentioned DoorDash, of course. That has benefited the likes of SoftBank, as you know. I was just looking through their slide presentation. Although for some reason not coming up on this computer, but upstairs, DoorDash, a huge, huge winner for the Vision Fund, some $8 billion or more, I believe, is what we're talking about. I want to make sure I'm not that I translated already from yen to dollars there, but has helped the Vision Fund is really to significant gains. Again, because of all of this capital markets activity, Jim, that we're talking about, the valuations that we're seeing on names such as DoorDash, and you can go through any number of other ones. In fact, Vision Fund 2 is benefiting from Open Door. Remember that one? Which is going public through a SPAC.
They're having a good year, good quarter.
And so many others. And it does get us quickly to sort of the speculative parts of this market, to a certain extent at least, whether it's the Reddit trade, of course. And we'll keep an eye on shares of GameStop, as we always do, and or AMC. Did you see, by the way, that Wanda is trying, may have registered so that they can potentially sell stock, unclear if they have yet.
Right.
But there it is. And then to SPACs, as you point out. So many out there that are both listing and then that are announcing their deals. And, I mean, you're bringing so many companies public, Jim. If we were having a wave of IPOs of all sorts of different types of quality, we'd be talking about it as well.
Yes. I mean, this morning I'm looking at Volta, which is a SPAC that's merging with an outfit called Tortoise. And, you know, maybe the Tortoise beats the hare. SNPR, they're merging. David, you know what they are? They're a differentiated and unique electric vehicle charging station. There are now four differentiated, unique EV charging stations out there.
Yeah. The EV is fascinating because you've got so much competition between so many of these companies that are getting access to capital that are going to be able to fund their business plans. But, Jim, you know, there's always going to be winners and losers. The question is who it's going to be. Is it going to be the best idea? Is it going to be the best science, best execution? Somebody going to bring them all three together? I don't know the answer, but I don't know that they're all going to be the winners.
Well, I listened to Gore's number 7 come on Squawk Box this morning.
Right.
They're talking about they have $400 million in the game, which is a lot more than some of these other guys in the game. That seemed compelling to me. David, we have a lot of companies that are involved with direct listing, too. Some of the enthusiasts out there love Palantir. Palantir's AI, very good company. We don't really know a lot about the financials yet other than the fact that it came direct and it's tripled. But they made a deal with IBM. Now, typically, David, when you do these deals with IBM, it's a kind of a one-minute bump, frankly, because IBM likes to make deals. But no, the enthusiasts have gotten behind Palantir. It's going to be the biggest gainer right now. And that is another form of excitement, or you could say speculation, because that deal in the hands of XYZ Corp would mean very little. XYB, let's say it was Salesforce, right, which they have a deal. But no, the people who like Palantir take this, David, and they just run with it.
Yep.
And I don't think when you try to do traditional analysis of the value of that deal, it will not produce that kind of return. It would not. But it doesn't matter because maybe the traditional analysis, David, is the quant.
Right. It's a press release. I don't know. I haven't even.
It's a press release.
Yeah, it's a press release.
It's a press release.
They have a partnership consisting of IBM's hybrid cloud data platform designed to deliver AI for business with Palantir's next generation operations platform for building applications.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Red Hat.
That's worth 10%. Come on.
Well, David, it's an enthusiast stock.
Yes.
In the same way that we talk about, and we put up a graphic often about a video game company.
Yes.
You know, it's interesting. There's a lot of people who like PetSmart today. I don't know if you've seen that symbol, Woof.
Right.
Well, Woof is challenging Chewy.
Yes.
Well, the person who really got GameStop going is a co-founder
of
Chewy.
Correct.
So is that good or bad for GameStop that Woof might be challenging Chewy when the person on the board that got GameStop going is from Chewy?
I don't know.
You don't?
No, I don't know.
You don't know?
No, I don't know what if and why he has not collared his stock. That's Mr. Well, what's his name? Mr. Cohen, is that his name?
No, it was Ezra.
Ezra?
But what's so great about this, David, is that it's all one giant, vast conspiracy against the little guy.
Mm-hmm.
Little guys, wake up. You're smarter than the big guys. Don't buy the conspiracy. Buy the companies you like. Right? There is no big guy conspiracy, David. There's more information goes to wealthier people than not because they pay a lot of commission. But is that information worth it anymore? Wouldn't you rather do the information provide a reason to buy GameStop, Wall Street?
Say that again. Someone was talking in my ear.
How's that person doing?
No.
When you think about the move in GameStop, it wasn't really led by Wall Street.
Right.
It was led by the people.
Yes.
And David, as I learned in college, the people united will never be defeated.
Janet Yellen had some thoughts, I know, on GameStop and Reddit. We've also got that Reddit ad that we all saw in the Super Bowl. Take a listen to Yellen.
The Securities and Exchange Commission is working hard to assemble a report that gives us the facts. And when we have them, we can look at whether or not there were issues that need to be addressed through new policy or regulations. Mm-hmm. We need to make sure the markets function efficiently, that investors are protected, and also that they understand the risks that they face when they engage in trading. Mm-hmm. And all of that will be reviewed.
Yeah, the risks that they face when they engage in trading, Jim.
What can I say?
Which is something you try to explain as well.
I know, but I'm regarded as being a suit.
Yes.
Thank heaven I got a nice one on. This is a 180 count, dude.
I'm glad to see that.
Yeah.
Glad to see you back in general right here in the studio. So
things I like, education.
Can't get close enough to actually touch your
no
suit.
No problem.
Yet,
but I like education. I like informed investing. Mm-hmm. I like people doing a good job. I like suitability. David, I am the definition of old hat.
Yes, you are.
And you know what? None of those things fly, because those are all reasons why people think I'm keeping them down. Yeah. I'm keeping him down. I also, by the way, hurt Mahomes' toe. I don't know if you knew that.
I was not successful
in blocking Hill almost everywhere.
Yep.
I was everywhere in that game. People don't know it. They thought I was tweeting.
There's a lot of, you know, what we're talking about, those Super Bowl ads, that GM ad on EV with Will Ferrell. We'll talk about, yeah, see that.
How about Bruce?
Springsteen? Yeah. The end there? Yeah. That was powerful. All right. We're going to take a quick commercial break. Speaking of commercials, stay with us. We're right back.
For more than a decade, Comcast has been committed to bridging the digital divide and connecting millions to affordable, high-speed internet. But the barriers to get connected go well beyond affordability. Through Project Up, Comcast is committing $1 billion to reach millions with digital skills training, resources, and opportunities needed to succeed in a digital world. Project Up, building a future of unlimited possibilities. Learn more at comcast.com/projectup.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Welcome back. Right before the break, we were talking, of course, about some of those Super Bowl ads, whether it be EV that GM is focused on. Also, of course, gets us to Tesla and Bitcoin. Want to bring Carl in. Gotten some audio issues ironed out there. Carl, I don't know if anything stood out to you from the game. Obviously, the game itself was not particularly exciting after a while, though we kept waiting for Mahomes to make his move. Never happened.
Yeah. Difficult for CBS, maybe from a rating standpoint. We'll see how many people stayed up late. But, the pastiche, Jim, of the advertising community was definitely centered around EV. GM, of course, with that ad with Will Ferrell, where he goes to Norway because he finds out that Norway is somehow ahead of the U.S. in EV development. I think we have a brief bit of sound. Take a listen.
Did you know that Norway sells way more electric cars per capita than the U.S.? Norway. Well, I won't stand for it. Come on. With GM's new Ultium battery, we're going to crush those losers. Crush them! Keenan.
Wait, what's this?
Oh, it's my daughter's birthday.
I don't care. Grab an EV and meet me in Norway. Hey, Awkwafina, Norway's beating us at EVs.
Nuh-uh.
Uh-huh. Meet me there in an hour.
Can I ride with you?
No! GM's Ultium battery is made for all types of vehicles. Soon, everyone can drive an EV.
Will is probably flying private.
Okay, Norway, listen up, you fish-loving... Oh, this place is adorable.
It gets better from there. We're going to get earnings this week, Jim, from GM. And also, as we watch Brent at 60, I know David mentioned at the top, JPM's going to host a call this morning about what they're arguing will be a massive underinvestment cycle in crude energy on top of a oil super cycle and sort of the risks of massive infrastructure underinvestment.
Oh, no, oil super cycle. Whenever you're a super cycle, we got to duck. The oil is at 60. The curve says 5 years from now will be considerably lower, 48. Back in November when oil was much lower, the curve also indicated 48. So the curve is, the forward market is not signaling this is going to happen. Of course, we wonder at what point did the Saudis say, you know what, we're going to take the money and run here. But I will point out that Feb 10 is a very important day because Mary Barra, apropos of that commercial, is so committed to ending fossil fuel cars that I think you're going to say to yourself, we can talk all we want about Tesla, and Tesla's going higher, obviously. Bitcoin will go higher. But Mary Barra is not going to be left behind. It's same way, similar to the way Jim Farley said he would not be left behind at Ford. David, it is kind of an incredible moment where you see short-term oil going up, and yet you have people at major companies, and by the way, major countries, we could make fun of, but that are so committed to getting rid of fossil fuels, long haul cars, whatever, or move to green hydrogen, that it's really it's going to be a clash of the titans. And I don't think it's going to get to 2030 with oil still climbing. I think oil peaks.
You do.
I mean,
because, you know, when you do speak to, if you speak to a Mike Wirth, for example, who runs Chevron,
sure,
or any of the other CEOs of the major oil companies, they will tell you, listen, there is an expectation that that will occur over time between now and let's call it 2040. But at the same time, Jim, they'll still say the amount of money that was on CapEx this year was far below what was spent in 2013,
right,
when we were nowhere near, you know, what we're still consuming now. So even if we go like this in terms of consumption, there's still not enough money being spent to find new sources. We're going to need it, or else there is still going to be a big price tag attached to the commodity itself.
Nothing to disagree. The budgets are down. By the way, the federal lands, people keep asking me, what is Biden really restricting? The federal lands that would be drilled on are just some areas west of the Permian Basin, actually in New Mexico. So that itself is not going to cause oil to go up, our own drilling or lack
right,
of.
Right.
Pipelines very hard to build. That could make it so that more oil's trapped here. But, David, look, I think it's really going to come down to when we listen to Mary Barra talk about the fact that she's committed, say, to a series of 2030 expectations, and whether we can get the batteries, David. One of the reasons why, and I happen to like GM at the quarter, one of the reasons why we are so struggling to try to figure out is how quick this is going to be, is that the alternative engine and the alternative batteries, we can't just turn on a dime, David. There may not be enough of the ingredients in batteries to make enough batteries. So we're all very glib that we have them. GM does have a very good battery operation.
Yeah, the question also becomes, Carl, right, exactly. What all those batteries, all the charging stations that are going to need to be put in. I mean, this is years to come, not to mention the power generation itself for all those cars that are going to be now relying on the electricity grid as opposed to pumping gasoline. It's going to be a fascinating transition. Yep. We're watching it occur, of course, in the capital markets every day in terms of the speculative nature of some of these names for companies that some will be the leaders and some will fall by the wayside, as we said earlier.
They're not all going to win,
yeah,
David?
No,
Carl, don't they all win? No.
Well, I think to David's point, transitioning from a network of gas stations to a complete reliance on the grid over the long term raises risks about not just investment in the infrastructure. There's cyber issues as well, national security risks. So, yeah, it's a giant pivot. By the way, Jim, it sort of brings us to what Tesla said in the 10K, not just about Bitcoin, although that was obviously the major news, but this notion they said that microchip demand in personal in electronics, because of everybody buying iPads and PCs during COVID, is now having an impact on them, just as the chip shortage at large is having an impact on the industry in aggregate.
But I think that Ford had a great quarter, but then Jim Farley correctly identifies maybe $1.5 billion, $2 billion comes off. You can't find the chips. The chips are in some ways being hoarded by the Chinese. They do not have just-in-time. We have spent a huge amount of time in our country having just-in-time inventory. Make sure we don't need the, we take the chips the second we need them. And what's happened there, Carl, has made it so that if you have a just-in-case philosophy, which China has, you're getting all the chips you want. It is going to hurt GM. It is going to even hurt Tesla. They can make it, but it's an 18-month start to finish. And, of course, there's a lot of moves to have foundries built in this country. It takes a long time to build a foundry.
Yeah. Guys, Jim mentioned some of those calls on Wolf. Got some other new coverage on stocks like Affirm. Got some calls on Target, Denny's, Viacom, Estee Lauder, Las Vegas Sands, MGM. We'll get to all of that when we come right back.
The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
All right, time for a mad dash as we get ready for an opening bell here on this Monday. You love Estee Lauder.
Yes, I do. And I
just love talking about Estee Lauder all the
time. I do. Well, Fabrizio Freitas taught me so much. He's a fabulous CEO. He reported an amazing quarter. A lot of people were looking for a shortfall. Why? Because a lot of people say, well, wait a second. Isn't this stuff sold in Nordstrom? Isn't it sold in Macy's? That is such a small channel now because Fabrizio Freitas embraced tremendous direct-to-consumer around the world and has had unbelievable numbers in China. David, eight firms today go out positive. One of them, J.P. Morgan, which had been a leading bear, goes from sell to buy. I think this stock can easily, if you look at the average of the price targets, it's about 305. I don't think it'll have a hard time getting there because it's become the favorite of people who want a trade about the opening. Because when we open, we go to duty-free. That's where a lot of these places are sold. And China opens. China's healthy. But also, David, because it's the Zoomy generation, was the selfie generation. Now it's the Zoomy. And they talk on the call, and they talked on my show, about how much makeup you need on a Zoom call. That it's really flaws and all. I don't know, Dave, when you do a Zoom call, don't you find yourself looking kind of not faberish?
Yes, I'm not particularly fond of doing Zoom calls at all, as people know. By the way, why have so many Zoom calls replaced just regular phone calls? Why do you have to do a Zoom when you wouldn't have done a Zoom previously? Can't you just do a regular phone call?
Because you're a loser.
I'm a loser?
If you use a regular
phone call. That goes without saying. Why do you also have to now schedule your phone calls? Why can't you just call somebody and have them answer the darn phone? Sorry.
Believe it or not, it's the way people do it.
Yeah. I got to schedule calls now, and then they got to be Zoom calls, and then, as you say, I got to put makeup on to have the Zoom call.
You better put makeup on, damn it. I
just
did a Zoom call
yesterday.
Just answer
your phone when I call you.
I had a Zoom call. I did no makeup on. Five people said I look sicker than I've ever looked. I'm never doing that again.
You look fine.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome, and it's good to have you back in person.
Thank you.
At least here. Nice suit, too. All right, opening bell coming up. Stay with us.
That's the five-second Reddit ad from the Super Bowl last night, reading in quote, who knows, maybe you'll be the reason finance textbooks have to add a chapter on tendies. Jim, interesting, you know, Art Cashin, who's had some different views about the so-called retail rebellion, writes this morning, he says, everything we've read confirms what we said from the very beginning, that the retail rebellion was a bit of a farce and an illusion that the financial media bought into much too readily.
Ooh, I hate disagreeing with Art. We've all known him for a long time. I think the retail revolution is real. I think it's much more involved with Robinhood and the 17 million people that they've signed up. Whether they're happy or not, they're there. Reddit is a form of dissemination. Is it this form that I like? It's an enthusiast form. David, I really don't have a problem with this. I want more people in. And when more people get in, maybe there's the possibility that they find a Tesla. Maybe they find a Palantir, as we mentioned. Maybe they get involved in a short squeeze that they might not understand, and we've got to help educate. But the more, to me, the Murray meant. The more, the merrier. And I'm never going to change. I want more people in this because they need to augment their paycheck.
Right.
They don't make enough. People don't make enough money.
No, understood. But you also want to be here to remind people that at some point, things can get irrational.
Right.
And the rationality does typically come back to markets in some way. I mean, those of us who reported on and lived through, of course, the late 90s into the dot-com boom, through the boom and into the crash, know it well. And we've seen it. And there are plenty of people who ended up getting hurt there as well.
Well,
there are plenty who made money along the way and then got hurt. I don't know where it all ended up, except that the U.S. government had a lot more tax receipts as a result of all that trading.
330 companies
failed. Gains, but a lot of companies failed.
330 companies failed between 1999 and 2000. That's a list. It's a veil.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's the opening bell, guys. At the NASDAQ, happy birthday. Celebration of its 50th anniversary. Adena Friedman, CEO, ringing the bell alongside former NASDAQ CEOs. At the big board, its supply chain software company, E2Open, celebrating its public listing via, what else, David? A SPAC. As we look at other news on the SPAC front from the likes of Danny Meyer, the Journal has this piece about Singer and Elliott.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it goes on and on. I know I'd heard a list last week. David Simon from Simon Properties. Obviously, we've already, Omar Ishrak, he did his last week. You have Danny Meyer, A-Rod. And every day, you just go on and on. Gores 6 did their deal. That's Matterhorn.
Right.
I know you're looking closely
or
at that
seven,
company.
Andrew talked about today.
Right. Was 6 or 7, though, did the deal. Gores 6, I think, did the deal.
Okay.
And there's
right.
7
right.
coming.
7 coming.
I mean, I can't even keep up, Carl, is where it really ends up in terms of the plans for SPACs to go public and then the ones that are doing their deals. But, Jim, it comes back to this idea. We're going to have an awful lot of public companies out there that we're going to talk about for one day and then lose sight of until perhaps either the day that they fail or the day that they get acquired or, I don't know, something else newsworthy happens or they have some breakthrough in battery technology that sends everything up.
Well, we have some good charts on CNBC.com, which lists all the, you know, the 50 that are where they are and another 50, and they're already out of date. Unfortunately, I had to constantly update them. But you're right, David. Look, I do the lightning round on Mad Money, Carl, and most of my questions that I get are about SPACs. And I constantly try to review, well, how much money does the sponsor put in? Who are the people? And I'm getting defeated by the notion of the celebrity SPAC. The person with a great brand name is someone people give money to. And it's kind of like they have a bank account to be able to do what they want. What I worry about is, are there enough great companies to buy? Because if there were, then why wouldn't all these public companies be in there buying them? It's hard to believe there could be that many great ones.
This is where Ari Berkoff, David, has talked on our air about sort of broadening your mind as to the universe of potential cash flows that can be discounted, right? I mean, in his view, it could be a single person, a celebrity, an athlete.
No doubt. And listen, there are a lot of private companies out there that we perhaps were not as aware of. There are units of public companies that perhaps would also be something that could be taken public through a SPAC, and that there have been a couple done. There will be more. Obviously, there are also plenty in the portfolios of private equity firms, and so it becomes an exit in the same way an IPO would have been, because essentially that's what we're talking about as we take a look at AMC shares, guys, down. But to Jim, to your point, you also wonder, with all of this money chasing these deals and at least some questions about the timing and due diligence and how much time is being taken by some of the sponsors on doing their diligence, you certainly have to keep an eye on the quality of the transactions. Everybody's going to promote them out of the box, as they should. Some are going to be great, just like an IPO of any company,
right,
potentially with a very strong business model, and the ability to execute will ultimately succeed, and quite a few will ultimately not be particularly good. They're not all in the same. As we take a look at our post-deal, that gives you
there
a sense,
go.
By the
that's
way.
That's what I need to see.
That's the 50 deals that have been done by SPACs after they've announced the deal, okay? Then we also have the 50 that are just SPACs that haven't actually announced their deal, which in some ways is even more incredible.
Yes.
Why aren't they all just trading at 10 is the question. Why are they all up? And obviously we've talked a great deal about CCIV perhaps as being the poster child,
right,
for a stock that has gone up enormously on the prospect of a potential transaction. In this case, at least, people think they know what deal it's going to be. But Jim, so many of these just move up for no real reason other than perhaps confidence in the sponsor.
Well, I think you field, and Carl, you probably do. I get calls probably every other day. Should I do a SPAC? And it's a person who's a name brand. And the question is, well, why not? And I say, why not? Because when we started the street, and we came public in 1999, Goldman, Anthony Noto, great banker, now SoFi, took the management team around, flying all over cities. What happens? Well, the management team does nothing for 10 days as they sell the deal. 10 days, business falls off. This is a really easier way to do it. But what's amazing is they're allowed to make projections. Carl, they make these 20, 30 projections. And now the SEC hates projections. They make it sound like it's easy as pie. The SEC doesn't want that. The SEC has a review, a very rigorous review. You go back and forth and back. And all of that's gone. And I cannot believe that Gary Gensler is going to say, you know what, we're going to let this SPAC market be bigger than the regular market. I also can't believe how the, because they get to do some financings, the big firms aren't shutting this down or trying to. But it is amazing that there are two standards. There's the standard of the SPAC and anything goes. And then there's the standard of the traditional offering where you can't really say much good at all. It's all risk factors. So every SPAC, David, the reason why I think, David, that they trade above 10 is yep. when you read them, they're all going to the moon. And I mean, you know what that, when they do that, the moon? You said?
Yeah.
Stonk, moon?
I like that.
You like that?
Yeah, I do like that.
Emoji.
I like that a lot.
Snap, good quarter. Why? Kathy Wood liked the quarter.
Boop. Going to the moon.
Yeah, going to the moon.
No, you're right, Jim, and you made this point as well. The SPACs obviously have to detail everything in their prospectus when they go public, but to your point, it really is only about what they're hoping to accomplish. But when they actually announce the deal, they aren't as wedded to those numbers because those are just projections.
Yes.
And they aren't in the same, treated the same way, I guess, Jim, is what it amounts to. And so that you can project things that you might not otherwise feel as emboldened to do were it an S-1 filing.
Yeah, well, of course, Carl, when you submit something to the SEC, you submit a document to the SEC, there's a group of very smart people who look things over and they come back and say, we think this is risky, we're not sure you can do that, we're not sure you can do this, and they're your bosses and you change. Here, the SEC, I'm not saying they take a blind eye. I'm sure that Gary Gensler, the new SEC head, is trying to figure out what the heck to do. But the kinds of things that are being done here, having submitted a deal to the SEC, are laughable. I mean, if I made these claims when I started the street, the SEC would have called me and said, listen, you're never coming public ever. Ever. Because we're not going to allow that. Yeah. We want to protect the people from what we think is overenthusiasm. And, you know, no one's protecting the people from these, which is why I think David's right. In 1999, they did get a little lax at the SEC because there were so many deals. But at the same time, they knew that you could not make certain projections. David, this time, the SEC must be looking, the professionals at the SEC, and saying, we should be reviewing these. People are going to get hurt. Right now, they're small enough, maybe not that much hurt. But they have a proprietary nature of trying to keep it so that the public isn't hurt. And that's nowhere. Nowhere at all.
And Carl, speaking of that, of course, we watch AMC shares. They've been successful in selling stock. Questions there as to whether some of their other shareholders are now taking advantage of this incredible move upward from, let's call it, $2. Interesting story. And I think it was the New York Post just sort of detailing the different moves that Adam Aron has made to keep that company out of bankruptcy and successfully so, sort of buying time until, well, something unexpected came along, didn't it, Carl, which is this move that allowed them to sell even more stock and perhaps allow them now to have plenty of runway to get to that point where people really are going back to the movie theaters.
Yeah. By the way, Wynn offering another 5.5 million shares. We're watching that. Jim, record highs across the board. We should mention that. That's without the help of Apple today. One of the big laggards is Hyundai now says, Jim, they are not currently in talks with that, with Apple on that autonomous EV. I mean, there had been one report out of South Korea that said this deal was going to get signed on the 17th of this month. Well, it really just points to the opacity of trying to read into what Apple's doing on any front.
Apple's Fight Club. If you, first rule of Fight Club, you can't talk about Fight Club. And whenever you're an analyst covering a company that does a lot of business with Apple, you're always frustrated because you're never allowed to mention. Let's say, oh, and then a big company. And then there's a company out in California. If anyone squawked about this from the Korean side, it's a no-go. That is not how Apple does business. Apple's about the customer. Apple will announce a deal when they think the customer is going to get the best shake and the best product, not when the supplier says it. So, I mean, maybe it was a gun-jumping situation, but Carl, Tim Cook stands for one thing, which is that the customer satisfaction is the most important thing. He does not stand for news releases. He is not about putting out things until he's absolutely certain it's right. So I think when this story unravels, we're going to find out that perhaps Hyundai was not as circumspect as they should have been when they're dealing with Apple. Hmm. Confirm.
Overall, guys.
Yeah.
A bit of a reopening play. Jim, second time in a couple of weeks now we've seen Disney lead the Dow. We're up to 185, followed by some oil. Cisco, by the way, awfully close to an 18-month high. But, you know, we got a downgrade of Viacom today. I think it was over at UBS on some challenging risk-reward. But Disney is powering ahead.
That may have been a reaction to the endless Paramount Plus ads.
There were a lot of those.
Yeah, there were a lot of that. Yeah,
they pushed that hard.
It was tough enough to watch the game. I had to watch
when
those.
When you're last into streaming, you got to push it hard. I will say this. My daughter said, wait, they're going to have SpongeBob?
There you go.
Yeah, SpongeBob. Like, we're getting that one. So I was like, all right.
But Disney, Disney is maybe, I've been saying Disney and Boeing are the two greatest reopening trades there are. Disney is a place that needs crowds, needs lines, needs Aaron to be able to have theaters open, needs sports, obviously. Sports are more fun when they're not cardboard figures. Matthew McConaughey, cardboard figure, excellent ad. He used to be a Lincoln perspective. You know, now he's Doritos.
Yeah.
But
if you take a look at Disney on the power of direct-to-consumer.
Direct-to-consumer.
And Viacom,
and
by the way,
has gotten a lot of ads.
Viacom's gotten swept up to a limited extent, at least, I think, in some of the speculative fervor around large short positions. That stock's still at 43% year to date, back to a $33 billion market value at Viacom. Almost respectable. But we'll keep an eye on, was it March 4th? I think they're rolling out Paramount Plus. Guys, I did want to get to something we don't see too often, which is an overbid. Jim probably knows more about these companies than I do because I know very little. I'm talking about Coherent, which got a bid just a few moments ago from a company called MKS. It's an overbid because they're already in a deal to be acquired by a company called Lumentum. You see, Coherent right now, I got it halted. So that's what's going on with that. It's $240 a share. It's made up of 115 in cash and 0.7473 shares of MKS for each share of Coherent. That is a premium to the Lumentum deal, they say, of about 16%. So we're going to see how Coherent opens when it, trades when it opens, Jim. At the same time, Lumentum is expected to make a case here. It says, you guys have huge antitrust risk. This is a board that's not going to want to undertake that, particularly not with any guarantees about it. I guess they are the largest and most dominant players in the development of lasers used for scientific applications and certain microelectronic fabrication applications, Jim.
Very good
and
company.
So that's going to be their line of defense at Lumentum, saying antitrust. We'll see whether it works.
Well, it could. I mean, these are companies that are laser, but they're also very cutting edge when it comes to fiber, when it comes to lighting. And when we think about fiber, remember, you know, David, we don't talk enough about 5G. We don't talk enough about what people can do to replace maybe one day the current system with 5G. 5G obviously on the mind of a lot of the advertisers last night. But anything involving light, anything involving laser always ends up being involved with telecommunications and with the data center and how people get information. So this is, you know, this deal, there's another deal to David, that is important. I don't know if you saw the deal that Renesas, that's a Japanese company, 20% premium, buying Dialog. Mm-hmm. That is an Apple supplier. Lighting, power management, audio, power conversion. These are the consolidation here all started with Lisa Su, AMD, buying Xilinx, trying to get that deal done, 2022?
Right.
And then Jensen Huang trying to buy NVIDIA. Trying to buy the big dog, ARM. Yep. And that's the one I think is in your wheelhouse because you know that ARM is not going lightly.
Yeah, and ARM, of course, part of that portfolio at SoftBank, Carl, which also had a strong quarter on the back of significant gains at the Vision Fund. We talked about it earlier. Finally, Carl, as we send it back to you, keep an eye on those banks. Maybe Bob Pisani will talk a bit about them. Been very strong, of course, as yields do move up a bit.
Yeah, all sectors green. Energy's leading, but banks aren't far behind. VIX up a little bit here, back above 21, but record highs across the board. Let's get to Bob Pisani. Hey, Bob.
And we have the bank index has been doing terrific recently. Of course, the yield curve has been steepening, and that's got the banks moving. It's also got a little concern about inflation, but David Wright, banks one of the big movers this morning. S&P new high, NASDAQ new high, Russell 2000 new high. We're just hitting it right across the board here. Dow new high. In fact, a global rally, really. But you see energy stocks leading today. We've got oil over 57, highest levels in a year. There's the David referencing the banks. There's the bank index. The BKX had a great run in the last couple of weeks. Materials, industrials. What is this? This is the reflation trade. That's what you're looking at right there. You see consumer staples consistently lagging day in and day out the last couple of weeks. That's because investors have bought into the reopening story. So look what the market narratives are. traders are enamored with Janet Yellen. I mean, she was on the Sunday talk shows. Go back to full employment if we go big. They believe the go big narrative. They believe it's going to pass. Virus infections are slowing. The rollout is continuing. I mentioned last week, Q1 and Q2 earnings estimates are rising. That's the most important thing for the markets because they're buying in to the narrative that the analysts have been underestimating the strength of the recovery and the strength of the rollout. There are inflation worries that are out there. Oil at a one-year high. People have been talking about the commodity inflation that we've been seeing. The 30-year bond went over 2% briefly. The 10-year note, we're at the highest level since about March of last year, 1.8% or so. So the inflation worries are there, but that narrative is not dominating the market right now. It's the rollout. It's the reopening narrative that really is important. This is a global rally. I keep emphasizing we hit a 30-year high on the Nikkei today, and going back to 1990, folks. We have a historic high in India and the Bombay. We have an historic high in Germany as well. So it's not just the United States, and emerging markets have had a very good move up as well. If you can see, when I say it's the reflation, the stay-at-home stocks just aren't as popular anymore. And you can see this again today. The Amazons, Electronic Arts, Activisions, Zooms, they're not having the energy that they had 6 or 7 months ago. And that's evident again today in the trading situation. Finally, just want to note, we had briefly, Carl mentioned, happy birthday, NASDAQ. It was February 8th, 1971. It was 50 years ago. NASDAQ began operations. That's quite a feat here. You know, it was originally a quotation system. You couldn't trade on NASDAQ. It was just a quote system. And their main thing, they really helped lower the bid-ask spreads. Because remember, all this stuff was over the counter. And it was people on telephones. And the bid-ask was a mile wide. Once you start being able to see it on a computer screen, which is what NASDAQ did, you couldn't trade, but you saw it on a computer screen, the bid ask started to narrow. And that was a big contribution that NASDAQ made. In 1998, they were trading online. They were really the first one to trade online, but it's a big thing. And remember, you can buy the NASDAQ, you can buy the ETFs around them. There's several of them, and there they are, including the QQQ Trust. Guys, back to you.
All right, Bob. Thanks, Bob Pisani, this morning. As we go to break, take a look at how treasuries are faring. We mentioned yields a couple times this morning. 10-year did get near a one-year high on this optimism surrounding the $1.9 trillion COVID relief package. As we said earlier as well, 30-year hovering just around 2%. Europe, German 10-year hits a fresh five-month high, and the Italian 10-year yield still near some one-month lows on these hopes around Mario Draghi helping to form a new government over there. Finally, a look at the dollar index as we get record highs across the board at the open. Don't go anywhere.
It's your boy Cassius Cuvé. You know I gotta give a shout out to everybody in the SPAC game help me eat good these days. Man, it's crazy. If you win a SPAC game, you know what I'm talking about. We sick of IPOs day one locking us out. My man Randy first told me DraftKings would go public. It's merging with a SPAC and the market gon' love it. I'm like, a SPAC? What the hell's that? You get in on the ground flow. It paid big, so I searched and then I found Mo. Twitter put me up on game.
Well, there's more evidence, the SPAC phenomenon. Yeah, it is spreading. A new music video called SPAC Dream. The rapper there is Cassius Cuvé. I enjoyed listening to it, of course, Jim. You may have as well. He knows his stuff. And there's a lot of name checks. I think that's the right term, Carl. I'll go to you out there for our colleagues at Fast Money and a lot of other people as well, all in that so-called SPAC game.
Pretty much so.
I was going to say, Jim, is it indicative, is it toppy or the beginning of something new?
Well, it wasn't in the halftime show. So, I don't know.
You know, give him time.
He got another full year. But yeah. If it wasn't the halftime show, the weekend pretty good. I was
He ends on one of my favorite lines, of course.
What's
one
that?
I've used a lot here, and he mentions you as well. Take a listen.
Pick a Tesla over other EVs is no surprise, but I can tell Jimmy Chill likes polarizing. It amazes you how many EVs are in favor. Much respect to Mr. Musk, Elon the trailblazer. Maybe my investments will make half of you green. Like David Faber say, I got a SPAC and a dream and a mouth.
There it is. Everybody's got a SPAC and a dream. And that's certainly every day we see evidence of that, don't we, Jim?
Oh, well, when you see these people who are announcing now, you remember what you're doing. Let's say you're a bank loan officer and the guy comes in and he's a fantastic name and says, look, I want $500 million. I mean, you know, that would be, so let's see your balance sheet. No. What's your idea, David? Do you have a dream? If you get a dream, you get the half bill, right?
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy Chill give you a half bill.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
All right, Jimmy Chill.
You betcha.
Yeah. Carl, I think it's too late for us to have us back in a dream, but at least we can enjoy the wrap.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's looking pretty tempting at this point. Guys, we'll take a break as the S&P above 3,900 for the first time. Don't go away. Take a look at S&P laggards this morning. Hasbro's at the top of that list. Despite beating earnings estimates by about 13 cents, increased interest in board games and toys due to the pandemic. We're going to check in with Brian Goldner on the quarter coming up in the next hour of Squawk on the Street. Don't go away. Let's get to Jim and stop trading.
Good old-fashioned Wall Street research still moving something. Target, Steve recommends hold a buy. And part of this because how much people love Shipt, which is their same day, which I love, adore, and Brian Cornell's done some incredible work there. I think it's a great stock to own for opening or closing. People are making too many decisions like Hasbro. Oh, well, that's a nesting stock. There's nothing nesting about Target. It's just doing really well. I think it's a great buy.
Yeah, their general point, Jim, is that Target customers are more likely to use things like same-day e-commerce.
It's so much fun. I mean, we do so much. We order Shipt. If I say, listen, guys, I need Elmer's glue. All right, well, it'll be here. I left my belt home once. So I said, okay, I need a belt. Well, Shipt had the belt at 1 o'clock, a very nice belt. Thank you, Adil Reba, for ordering that. So we're on it every day. Sometimes we just do it to challenge them. You know, hey, could you guys send us some Crayolas? You know,
let's see what they're capable of.
Anything. They'll send you anything. Well, you'll be by noon.
That's going to make Simon Property interesting tonight.
Oh, boy. David is David Simon. We all know if he's voluble. He's voluble. He doesn't like critics. I like that. Jimmy Chill likes that. Okay, tonight I have Veru, which is a very important announcement today about trying to get people out of the hospital. More importantly, trying to get people survive. There's still people dying with COVID. As David said, they've got something. I like, you know, this AVA. David, you love this. It's LIDAR. Have we even talked LIDAR today? What a bunch of losers we are. Hey, and Steve Engel runs a real company, which is Linde. No, they're all real. Don't worry about it. But Linde is the gas company that you need for rockets, that you need for dental, that you need for industry, that you love. Linde, I love it. Good to be back, Lloyd. That's, you know, that's shining.
Oh, thank you.
California.
Good to have you back.
Thank you.
I thought it might be I thought it might be a Dumb and Dumber reference.
Yeah.
Jim, we'll see you at 6. Mad Money, 6 p.m. Eastern Time.
You've been listening to the opening hour of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.